it on, and then you rub against the salt, it's going to look all white
and
shocky.
Well, that's why we're gray.
Well, okay, but most people have black coats, actually.
Fashionista Elif, go.
Yeah. Coral red is actually a big color right now. Coral red or...
Dave knew that.
Like love orange. That, Elif.
Yeah, you can wear bright colors. It's just be careful.
I'll bet. Just do this today.
And black is slimming, remember?
Randomly take... I think that's what it is, Mary. I think that there must be something about the eye and the psychology of us human beings that says black is slimming or more attractive or better contrast. I know that if you have a dark jacket or sweater on or whatever, a pop of color really illuminates you. But why not do the reverse? Do all color and then just do a pop of dark, right? Do a black scarf or a dark scarf, your gray scarf, Dave, as you wear a coral red jacket and bright yellow trousers. Oh, I would love to see that. Could we Photoshop that
on
him?
Red and yellow?
I don't care. I just want to, it doesn't even have to work, quote unquote. Green. Listen, if you look at the front page of the life section or entertainment section, what is that? The A&E section of the Tribune today, there is a picture of the Obama portraits, which are coming to the Art Institute next summer. It was just announced, so they're in Washington, D.C., and if you haven't seen them in a long time when they were first done, you'll remember them maybe as I described them. Barack Obama is sitting there in a field of green. It looks like he's backed up against the ivy at Wrigley Field, but it looks so alive and vibrant, the color around him. And then the picture of Michelle, she's ponderous with her hand in her chin. There's those great arms, but her dress is this giant white canvas with pops of black and red and orange and yellow, and it's just iconic, right? So over a year now from when it actually, it's going to be here more than a year away, and people are getting excited about that. It's in the paper. So why am I telling you about all of this? Except that I think we really want some color in our lives. It changes your mood when you see it. And why not go with it? And I do think you're making a squishy face, Dave.
No, you know, I was
people
just...
People in other parts of the world do this all the time. We Americans are too tight.
No, I was just squinting because everything is kind of gray, and yet the light on your microphone is bright red. And if you kind of just kind of dim your eyes a little bit,
yeah,
it stands out. So I think I'm seeing your point.
Look at that. I'm taking a picture of it, mm-hmm. And I just took a picture of what you said.
Do you understand what I mean?
Yeah, no, I get it. See, this is a microcosm of Chicago fashion.
Right.
So now I'll tell you, rather than take the time doing it live on the radio, I'll put my phone down for a second and I will tweet that very image. I'm WGN King John in a minute.
But oh, people just don't like bright clothes. That's it. I think that's what it is.
That'll blow up my Twitter. I guess, Mary, but really, I just think we're conditioned to that. Let's do this. Let's pick a day in January this year or next year, maybe February of this year, and it'll be International WGN Radio Bright Colors Day. When you see school children wearing bright clothes, don't they look adorable? Don't you love it?
And it's safer, too. We can see them when they're walking to school.
Hey, Stella, you're on WGN Radio. Hello.
Hello, John. Good to talk to you.
Likewise.
Now, it's really so coincidental because just last night I had a strange dream that I saw myself walking down Michigan Avenue in my yellow slick. Now, this goes back to 1970. I bought a yellow slick. I loved it. It was at Charles A. Stevens, and I was working for the airlines at the time, and I'm walking down Michigan Avenue, and it was a standout. I mean, people would stop and ask me, where did you get that coat? I mean, it was absolutely beautiful. Anyhow, I was walking down Michigan Avenue, probably going to...
Yeah.
To Saks or something.
Right.
And anyway, I think I had the coat for about a year and a half, and I was on a trip to New York or San Francisco, and somebody stole it.
Oh,
and, you know,
no.
I looked for that coat. Yeah, I looked for that coat everywhere. Never, ever found it again, but I remember that coat. I was so fond of it. And you just brought back a lot of wonderful memories.
I'm glad to hear that. And look at that. You were dreaming about the vibrancy of that coat.
I dreamt it last night.
Listen to your voice. It makes you happy, doesn't it?
It was wonderful. Now you made my day even brighter.
Stella, you've done that for all of us. Thanks for the call. It's 9:27. We'll pause here. We've got some serious news. No, go straight? Okay, we got a little more time. 312-981-7200. Two things, by the way. If you're in a particularly bad area for the fog, and you can text us or call us, I'd just like to know what it is like out there. We are, as I mentioned a moment ago, right at Columbus and the river, downtown Chicago. We are feet from the river and not too far from the lake. And it's really bad here. But Steve was saying that actually some of the low-lying areas in the suburbs have even worse fog than we do, which is hard. That can't be true. Of course, we're 18 stories up, so it's maybe a little worse up here. We're in a cloud right now. That's what it's like here. I kind of chuckled because the president yesterday tweeted a picture of Barack Obama, photoshopped to look silly. And then, lo and behold, there's that picture of the official Obama portraits. I don't know how polarizing the Obamas are. I know that in Chicago, they're very popular. I think the lines for their portrait gallery portraits at the Art Institute next summer are going to begin forming soon. Those things are iconic. But about the president's impeachment, our news click yesterday asked you this question. The impeachment thing, dot, 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 A, I'm glued in. Fascinating and important. Or you could have said B, I'm not glued in, but I check it out now and then. Or about the television broadcasts of the president's the impeachment on TV, you could have said, nope, I'm not watching. The percentage of you who said I'm glued in, fascinating, it's important, is zero. The rest of you, most of you said you're not watching at all. That was 67%. 33% said, I'm not glued in, but I check it out now and then. That may be due to low voter turnout. I suppose some of you are glued in, but we haven't heard from you yet. The news click is at WGNradio.com. And on the John Williams page, I'm WGN King John on social media. Let's do the news. And while we're doing that, I'll post the iconic picture Dave said of the microphone, the mic light.
Iconic.
And how it, iconic, and how it represents really what we're talking about. I'm advocating for splashes of color on a gray day like today.
You'll come home with friends that you never knew you'd had, and you'll keep them.
Does Dave Ennett's coming along help or hurt sales?
Dave is neutral, but the fact that his wife Karen is going is a big boost.
Well, I know the speakers are on in this building, but I didn't know that Anna was still in the building. So cover me on this.
Hey, Dave.
You know I'm right here.
I love traffic. I love the colors yellow and green. I like talk radio when they talk about things. Let's talk about things.
The Ennetts are lovely people. Let's let the record show. You could do worse for travel companions than Dave and Karen Ennett
in Scotland with us.
SteveBertrandTravel.com. Hello. Actually, it's going to be a lovely trip. It's 9:40. By the way, Bill wanted to jump in here with an observation about something he heard in Steve Grzanich's news. Hey, Bill, you're on WGN. Good morning.
Yeah, they keep talking about these red line robberies. Now they're picking on kids and that. If people stop and think, it was probably, I don't know, a few months ago, it was after the Smollett thing and all that, Kim Fox came out and said in her statements they weren't going to prosecute people that did anything less than $1,000 robbery, unless they catch you with an illegal gun somehow. So they're not going to get no $1,000 on these trains and no $1,000 off of people on the street. So who's getting prosecuted? If they're not going to prosecute, the guys doing the robbery are wide open, if you stop and think about that. I mean, don't people realize that she made that statement, they weren't going to prosecute?
I heard that statement, too, but I don't know if I heard it correctly. Now, I'm looking at a couple
She said it. She said it on the news.
I know that. Hold on a second. Steve Bertrand and Steve Grzanich, help me out a little on this.
Well, Steve Grzanich, I just brought this into John, but that doesn't make sense to me, so we're trying to find the answer to it. And she did say in 2016 that shoplifting, anything under $1,000 would no longer be a felony. So, you know, we found that. So, not that it wouldn't be a crime or prosecuted, but that it would be a misdemeanor.
I have
it would no longer
head,
be prosecuted as a felony.
I have in my head that Kim Fox's office is not interested in prosecuting small-scale crimes. And somebody stealing my watch or my wallet or something on the L stop, I think, falls into that category.
I promise you that someone making the L more dangerous and scaring people on the L and stealing from people will be a prosecutable crime.
It better be. I'll tell you what, this is nuts.
But see, I think is this story came out, and it is now sort of transmuted, that's not a word, but to people who don't like Kim Fox, who are saying, oh, she's not prosecuting anything under $1,000. This is, she wouldn't prosecute it as a felony, and it's, she's talking about shoplifting.
Well, if somebody mugs me on an L stop, that's a felony.
I don't know, but I'm trying to figure out
then what's the threshold.
This
for
is
the
shoplifting
case.
She's talking about. She's not talking about armed robbery.
Right. So what we're talking about on the red line, these are armed robberies, and in many cases a threat is implied with either a weapon or one that's hidden or something like that. And then even if it's not a weapon, it's a strong armed robbery, and on top of that, it happens on the CTA, which I believe is a federal, makes it even more serious because if it's on the train, it's a federal offense.
Okay, but you know what? I took the red line to the green line. All the way down to by McCormick Place. That's where you go if you're going to go to Wintrust Arena to watch the DePaul Blue Demons. And it was an evening game. And I took the L back. So now I'm getting on the green line at about 10:30 in the evening. And I thought, if something happens to me, I'm going to be mad at myself for being so stupid as to get on this train at this time at this location. But then I thought, what the hell? This is public transportation. All these other people are getting on the train. I should get on the train, too. I took the train. It went fine. But when I hear stories about this, I think maybe I'm a fool for riding the L, at least in the evening, and certainly south of some place. And so I'm angry. I'm angry yeah. about this, and I'm frustrated about this.
I think the bigger part of the story is not necessarily the prosecution part of it. The bigger part of the story is catching the suspect in the first place.
Well,
because they rob you, and then they jump off the train and take off, and by the time the police get there, there is nobody in sight.
And Steve, this all came out of your story, right? You're talking about the advisory about the juveniles,
yes,
correct?
Yes.
So this is bad. I mean, it's not a good thing, but these are two incidents that have happened over the past, I think, 10 or 12 days.
They have a million riders a week. Steve Bertrand has dissuaded me from my plan to put cops in every car, on every train, and at every platform. That's not plausible. But I'd like a little more show of force these days.
And the suspect in this case, too, according to Julian Cruz and the police, has a cross tattooed on his head. So you
that's
might
half
be able
the
to
population.
See
this. No, that's half the people on my red line. That's there.
In fact, I really like yours.
This is what I'm so conflicted about. It. I love the blend of people on my L. I love that I'm sitting with these people and they're sitting with me and we get along or we don't, but we experience each other and that doesn't happen all the time. So I'm not running away from it, but I also realize sometimes you are putting yourselves in intimidating, maybe even stupid situations. And so what's a smart customer supposed to do? Patronize the thing or not? It would be a shame if they said, well, you shouldn't ride it at night or you shouldn't ride it in certain neighborhoods. This is a public transportation system. I'm yelling at you guys like you're supposed to fix it.
Stop looking at me.
Bertrand. So, I mean everything I just said. It's 9:45. Don't want to brag, but I was championing the cause of wearing bright colors on gray days. We should have a national Wear Bright Colors Day in January just to pick everybody's mood up. I put a picture on Twitter that Dave Ennett said we should put up, and that is of our blue mic flag, they call it, with the red light around it, with the hashtag splash of color on a gray day. It was Dave Ennett's idea. I think it's a perfect metaphor. And not to brag, but we're kind of blowing up Twitter. 4 likes. The first one was from MTV's Domati Pongo. So I expect this idea is going to go national.
Well, right. He's a national television personality.
Thank you, Dominator. We appreciate that. Yeah. Kristen McQuarrie from the Chicago Tribune, the editorial writer and columnist, tells me that she is also wearing, is it bright green today, Kristen?
I am. I was listening to you, and I'm actually doing, I'm going to be a guest tonight on Week in Review on WTTW, so a little plug for that. But so I have to wear a TV color. I normally go for the gray and the black for all the reasons that you talked about, but I am Kermit the Frog today, so you are welcome.
Wow. I'm going to watch Channel 11. What time are you on tonight?
7 p.m.
All right. And green trousers or skirt or slacks or top?
Oh, Lord, no. Black pants, but green top.
Okay. Well, we'll look for that and cheer the idea on. You tweeted yesterday. Kristen is an excellent follow on Twitter, by the way. Kristen McQuarrie, KristenMcQuarrie. Kristen McQuarrie at the Tribune. You wrote last night, who isn't concerned about corruption harassment scandals under Speaker Madigan? donors. IFT PAC on last filing day shipped $200,000 in teacher union contributions to Madigan. Here's just one page of his many protectors. And then you don't have an article about this, but it's a tweet, and it looks like of your computer screen, and it shows the people that have donated to Mike Madigan's campaign. Is that right?
Yes. So December 31st was the most recent filing date, and it shows that he raised $5 million over the last 3 months of last year just in this political committee that he oversees. So, I mean, in the middle of all these scandals, set aside the state budget crisis, underfunded pensions, worst credit rating in the nation, unbalanced budgets, on top of that, he's experiencing some of his closest associates getting accused of sexual harassment and, oh yes, a federal corruption investigation. And yet he is raising gobs of money right and left. So I just think if we really want change in the state, we have to put the pressure where it belongs, and it belongs on these organizations that keep him in power despite all of that.
You called them protectors. Why did you use that word?
Because I think he's actually, because he's in trouble, and a lot of his campaign fund, or not a lot, but a decent amount of his campaign fund is going toward attorney fees right now. So if you're funding him, you're ostensibly funding his defense in all these different cases, and a sexual harassment settlement, by the way, with a female former aide to his. I almost think people, because there's just such a cycle of corruption in the state, and a lot of the unions are the groups donating to him right now, they feel like their guy's in trouble. All right, you guys, our guy's in trouble. And it's actually helping him raise more money in the weird schadenfreude situation that we are in this state. So they're protecting him.
Spending money on a lawyer doesn't mean you're guilty. But his legal fees, there was a story, was it for the last quarter, were $400,000. This is a guy who's mired in stuff. And maybe he's squeaky clean, maybe he's not. But if I wasn't sure, maybe as a teacher's union, I would back off some of the union dues donations that are going to him right now. I'm just looking at the list So this screen grab of yours, the Illinois AFL-CIO, the Illinois Construction Industry, the Federation of Public Employees, the Illinois Federation of Teachers, these are all people who have given, and then if I scroll over to the right, $5,000, $10,000, $2,500, $10,000. Who is it that gave $200,000? The Illinois Laborers Legislative Committee. Mike Madigan doesn't need 10 cents. He'll get reelected forever. So why is somebody giving him $200,000, Kristen?
Well, I mean, money buys you access. He also sprinkles this money around to different legislative candidates who are going to be on the primary ballot on March 17th. It's really just status quo, keeping the same structure in place. But, you know, if you are a teacher, if you're a nurse, the Hospital Association donates. Every sector of our economy is donating to him in big, big ways. The Carpenters Union gave him $300,000. And again, this is just during the past 3 months. So you can't complain about government and throw your hands up and feel there's nothing you can do to change it if your union or your organization or your industry is keeping the apparatus in place through these kinds of donations. And I think that's the point.
I don't know what union dues are supposed to do. I guess buy me health care, but also maybe buy me legislation that's favorable to my industry. So I understand that. But doggone it, if those are my union dues, in fact, my union dues may be going to this now that I think about it. But if those were my union dues and they were going to a politician whose track record I really didn't like, I'd be mad at my union. I'm like, shoot, I get deducted every week to support Mike Madigan right now. What are you guys doing, you know?
Well, that's why the Supreme Court 2 years ago ruled in the Janus decision that you have a right as a union worker to no longer support. That was automatic. You were still paying fair share dues to a union whose activities you opposed. So you can disengage from your union under the Janus decision. There have been a number of people who, especially new employees coming up, who don't want it. It's a lot of money. If you're a teacher, that's a lot of money coming out of your paycheck every week. And the Janus decision allows you to make that choice.
Kristen McQuarrie is a good follow. You can read her in the Tribune, print and online on Twitter. She's Kristen McQuarrie. Look for her bright green top on Channel 11 tonight. Nice to
Thanks,
hear you.
John.
Thanks, Kristen.
Bye-bye.
It's Kristen McQuarrie. Hey, you're about to hear the news, and in that is a story about the coronavirus in Chicago. We'll talk to a doctor about what you and I should know about. How alarmed should we be about that? 1010 WGN. Good morning. It's John Williams. Just such a foggy, gray day today, and travel conditions are affected, although I'm a little surprised to hear Mary Vandeveld say that the travel times aren't as long as I would have thought. I mean, given the visibility and the fact that it's Friday, Mayor, it's not as cataclysmic as I thought you'd be sounding today.
Well, usually on Friday, it's lighter than usual traffic.
Oh,
is
that what
it is? In the morning, it's lighter. In the afternoon, it's not.
It's
try to figure that
thing.
Out.
Driving on Fridays, it's smooth. You
really?
Get in 35, 40 minutes and driving home, it's maybe the longest drive of the week.
Yep. So, well, a lot of people that live in the city are heading out.
Oh, that's what it is. Mm-hmm. Okay, fair enough. By the way, so last night I got home and I thought I'm going to go ahead and finish that movie I was talking about the other day, Begin Again, with Keira Knightley and Mark Ruffalo. James Corden's in there. Who's the lead singer for Maroon 5? Adam Levine. He actually is a good enough actor in there. He's kind of playing a music star, so it's not a stretch for him. But it's a really fun movie. I really enjoy it. It's about a down-on-his-luck music producer who finds this young woman who's singing in a cafe, and then they try and make a record together. And it's about that story. It's told in an interesting way, too. But at the end of the movie, I thought, you know, Keira Knightley can sing, which led us to a segment yesterday of movie stars who can sing in movies, and it's sort of surprising. You know, the Kate Winslets of the world, the Kristen Bells, the Gwyneth Paltrows is actually singing in a movie and sings pretty well. So we were sampling some of that yesterday, and I plan on doing a little bit of that today, although in just a moment we're going to pick up a line with Dr. Kevin Most and talk a little bit more about the coronavirus that's coming to town. Funny thing happened to me, though. So I went home last night, and I thought, I'm going to finish that movie. I had seen it before, but I wanted to watch it again. So a couple of nights ago, I did. And I got about three quarters of the way through. And then last night, I thought, I'll finish the movie. But for some reason, I wasn't able to restart the movie where it had started. And the version I was watching, you couldn't fast forward through, and it had some commercials in it. So I had to back it all the way up to the beginning and watch the whole thing again. So the last two nights, I've watched virtually the movie all the way through and have thoroughly enjoyed it. It's called Begin Again. Keira Knightley is the singer. Mark Ruffalo is Mark Ruffalo, et cetera, et cetera. But we will at least feature for you some other movie stars singing in movies. You will tell us how good they're singing. In fact, we'll let you guess who they are. Dr. Kevin Most is now on the phone line. Good. He's the chief medical officer at Northwestern Medicine Central DuPage Hospital. Doc, it's John Williams. You're on WGN. Good morning.
Good morning, John. How are you?
Good. Thanks for giving us a little of your time. But
sure.
Steve Grzanich and Bertrand have been doing the story about that coronavirus, and now a Chicagoan reported with that. What should I be thinking about? How concerned should I be about that?
Well, as a layperson, not that concerned. You know, if we want to put it in perspective, look, we've had a couple hundred cases of this worldwide. In a normal flu season, we'll have over a billion cases of influenza. So it being a novel, a new virus, that's concerning us in the medical field. So really, it's more for us from a preparedness point of view. And to be honest with you, we don't know a lot about it as far as how contagious it is and how easily it's passed from individual to individual.
It is a virus? Is it like a flu virus?
Yeah, it's interesting, John. There's seven known coronaviruses, you know. So if you look at coronaviruses, everyone that you're talking to and hearing this story right now has had a coronavirus in the past. So there are four common human coronaviruses that we all have. It's a common cold, usually short duration. There are three what we call novel coronaviruses. One was SARS, if you remember that, 2003.
I do.
One was MERS, which came out in 2012, and now we have this one. Coronaviruses are unique. They come from animals, so there aren't that many of them. It's not like the millions of strains that we see of other viruses. This one, without any vaccine and without any treatment, we're a little bit concerned, but it's more about awareness now and preparedness for us.
I read that they were called coronaviruses because they have spikes sticking out of them, and it looks like a corona around the sun. That's where it gets its name. Is that correct?
That's exactly it, John. And if you've seen, they've shown pictures of it on the radio, on TV, you can see that it does. It shows a corona, a crown-like around the entire virus, and that's how it kind of sticks and moves around people.
Do you know where this woman is being treated, the Chicagoan?
I don't. They're keeping that private, which is good from a private policy point of view. There's no concern that she's exposed people in the public. So really, for her privacy, it's great that we're doing this. It's good that we're aware that the case is here in Chicago. That makes all the hospitals now more aware of preparedness. But we know that she's in isolation. We know that she is not critically ill. So really, the goal for a lot of these patients, as was the patient in Washington, is get them out of the public so they don't spread anything. Many of these individuals don't actually need hospital care. They just need to be isolated so they can't spread it.
Two questions maybe you don't know the answer to. Is this more easily spread than others? And is this more dangerous? Because the number that jumped out at me at first was relative to the number of cases, how many of them had led to death. First, talk to me about how easily spread is this.
Correct. That's the concern, John. That's what we don't know right now. We'll take, for example, the measles virus, right? You can measles virus can be spread within a room very, very quickly because we know it's a very virulent and it's transmitted very easily. This one is so new that we don't know what that is. We know there's an incubation period, and we know that just based on the travelers, that when they left China, they had no symptoms. When they landed in the United States, they had no symptoms, and the symptoms began shortly thereafter. So although we have the screening processes in place, we know that there's an incubation period, so we are not going to be able to catch these individuals unless we can completely isolate them.
But if
what was your second question?
About how virulent or deadly it is. But, but before we get to that... If I don't know where this lady's been, but if she's been touching things or places or having contact with people and there's a 2-week incubation period, then I'm trying not to be alarmist. I promise you that. But I'm just wondering, she may not be the only one as a result, right?
Possibly. So when we talk about a 2-week incubation, we don't mean that the virus can live on a surface for 2 weeks. We mean that it's in the body, it is starting to replicate, and it doesn't hit a mass big enough to cause a response for anywhere from, 7 to 10 days. So the virus can't live outside of the body for a long period of time.
Right.
Very few can.
But doctor, so, but if she's passed it on to other people, they may be quietly walking around with it now too.
Correct. That is the biggest concern right now, and that's why we isolate the individuals as soon as we possibly can.
How deadly is this one?
Yeah, when we look at viruses, is it deadly? Yeah, it is. It has caused deaths. Now, we don't know a lot about the individuals who died. I mean, influenza is deadly as well, but this is a virus that the body hasn't seen. So individuals who have a weakened immune system, whether you have diabetes, heart disease, COPD, you're older, those individuals may not be able to sustain or start a good immune response to a virus they've never seen before. What the interesting will be the thing to see is how much of an immune response we're starting to see from just the common cold when we're exposed to this virus. So those will be the studies that they're doing on these individuals as we speak.
Dr. Kevin Most is on a phone line, a Chicagoan now reported to have the coronavirus. We don't know her exact location. Doctor just explained why that's being kept private so as to avoid hysteria, which I almost am starting to foment here. I don't mean to do that at all, but I think a lot of us have these sorts of questions. A couple of texters have asked questions like, hey, John, please ask the doctor about the respiratory panel for which tests for coronavirus. I don't even know what that means. Do you?
Correct. Yes. So when you come into the hospital, it used to be that we'd say, oh, this was a respiratory virus and just kind of hope it goes away. Now we have the ability to test individuals for what we call a respiratory panel. So we'll test them for very common respiratory illnesses, influenza, influenza A, influenza B, RSV, and then some other viruses as well. So we will test the individual for that. These are those individuals where we test them for the respiratory panel that it all comes up negative. If that all comes up negative and now you find out that the person was in China, the next thing we're doing is certainly sending that swab to the CDC in Atlanta where they have the testing ability to validate this.
Are the symptoms going to be different? Say I do come down with the flu. It is flu season. Should I tell my doctor, hey, maybe I got coronavirus? I mean, how do they know?
Yeah, that's the biggest problem right now, John. If this happened in the middle of the summer, we'd be okay, be a little bit more in tune to it. But if you went into a doctor's office or emergency room right now, the vast majority of patients are coming in with fever, cough, body aches, the exact same symptoms that we get from influenza, the exact same symptoms we get from other bad respiratory viruses. So really, it's now selecting that out. It's finding that needle in the haystack, and the one common thing that we're looking for is travel from China, travel through a large international airport are going to be the concerns that are going to be raised.
Does that include O'Hare and Midway?
It definitely includes O'Hare. It hasn't included Midway yet, but screening from any patients coming from China into Midway are definitely being screened right now. But again, like we said, the problem is that incubation period. I can get on the plane in China totally healthy. I can get off the plane in O'Hare totally healthy. They will not notice that I have a fever or any symptoms. And 2 to 3 days later, my symptoms start.
But Dr. Most, so pardon me, I cut you off. Yeah. Go ahead.
No, so that's why you saw the big clampdown in China to say we're going to restrict all travel out of the city right now.
If I traveled to or from O'Hare recently and now I have flu-like symptoms, I probably just have the normal flu, but I presume I should make my doctor well aware of that fact.
Yeah, you know, it probably is. I mean, if you were in Las Vegas and you had $1 million to bet, you'd bet $1 million that you had influenza over that you had, you know, the coronavirus. So you have to look at common things are common and unusual things are unusual. And unless you really had a close exposure to somebody on a plane from China, I would not be concerned walking through O'Hare right now, even through the international terminal.
You said 1 billion people have the flu a year?
1 billion people worldwide will have the influenza this year.
What is there, about 8 billion of us on the Earth? So
yeah.
1 in 7 or 1 in 8 of us?
16%. Yep.
I guess that's comforting in a way, right?
Well, it is comforting. You know, it's comforting, but it's also a wake-up for all of us. We have to realize, you know, we have a couple hundred thousand deaths from influenza every year. So we're talking about a virus right now that has caused, you know, what, a little north of 20 deaths or 30 deaths. But yet we look at influenza, which has hundreds of thousands of deaths each year. So, and we have medications for that, and we have a vaccine that can protect us from that.
And is this true? The flu that we get, that's influenza, is the same influenza outbreaks that wiped out millions of people in Europe and the rest of the world centuries ago. It's the flu. We're just so much better able to combat these things.
Absolutely. 100%. You know, the influenza virus, and it changes every year. It mutates every year, so we try to predict which strain. So this isn't as simple as the coronavirus where there's only 7 different strains. For influenza, there are many, many, many hundreds of strains. So trying to pick out which one is going to be the one that's going to impact us the biggest this year or next year is the work that's actually going on right now in the CDC as we prepare for next year's vaccine for influenza.
Chief Medical Officer at Northwestern Medicine Central DuPage Hospital. Boy, it's a good we've got a Dr. Kevin Most out there. Thank you, Doctor.
You're welcome, John. Take care.
Appreciate your time this morning. It's 10:23, so hopefully that helps. Hopefully you went, huh, but also, whew, okay, we're all right. That's at least my takeaway from it. although... After the 10:30 news, we're scheduled to visit with the people from the University of Chicago about the doomsday clock. Maybe we'll keep that interview just a little shorter than usual. But the doomsday clock predicts when, I don't know, the world ends. It used to be, I think, what we thought of as U.S.-Soviet relations. The closer we are to blowing each other up with atomic bombs during the Cold War in the 70s, you know, that made you crazy. And so you said, boy, the tick, 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 closer. But that's, I don't think, what it indicates anymore. I don't know really why they've pushed it closer to doomsday than ever before, but we'll let them explain it to us a little after 10:30. But again, we'll keep that one short and then tell some jokes and tell stories about cats. In the 11 o'clock hour, our Bright Side of Life segment gives you a chance to call in, tell us some good news in your world, and tell us why you're smiling. I got a couple minutes here, right, Elif? Can we do our little music game? So I was just telling you earlier about, see if you guys are any good at this. Mary, listen carefully. I'm going to play a couple songs for you. You tell me if you can tell me who the celebrity is that is singing in the song, all right? These are movie stars in movies who sing. Keira Knightley was an obvious one yesterday. I've had that movie on my mind, but let's go ahead and do another one, Producer Elif.
I know you belong to somebody new.
Two people, ukulele, at the beach. Who's singing?
You belong to me.
This one's easy, right? You guys getting it? Mary? Steve? Nobody knows? Anyone? Bueller?
Why is it supposed to be easy?
Because I'm looking at the answer and I know the movie, so then it's easy for me. But yeah, not so easy for you.
I've never heard this song in my life.
It's lovely, isn't it?
It's cute. It's very cute.
Steve Martin, Bernadette Peters, and The Jerk.
Oh, yeah.
All right, let's do another one, producer Ellis.
I never made it through that whole movie.
I love that movie, but, you know, I was a teenage boy, and so that was so funny. And then they have this lovely moment, and he's playing the ukulele, and there's a little fire, and they're singing by the beach, one of those scenes in the evening. And then they pause, and he's still playing, and then she picks up the trumpet and starts to play the trumpet. It's hilarious. Anyway, here's another one. 3, 2, 1, hit it.
My sister and I earned a vow, a week at least. Oh, yeah. But my sister is now unfortunately deceased.
She's good.
I know it's sad, of course, but a fact is still a fact. And now all that remains is the remains of a perfect double act.
Catherine Zeta-Jones.
Yeah, oh, I knew that one.
Oh, pardon me.
Yeah.
A little housekeeping here, Steve. You think any moment or you think in 10 minutes? You're not sure, huh?
No, I think, in fact, that they're just about to get started to explain things and just about what's going on in the particular case. And, you know, like Dr. Most told you, that most people shouldn't be concerned. Let's drop in now on Channel 9 as they begin to carry the address.
Thank you, Rich. Good morning, everyone. My name is Dr. Allison Arwady. I'm the commissioner at the Chicago Department of Public Health. This morning, the CDC announced confirmation of the second case of novel coronavirus in the U.S. and the first in Illinois. The patient is a Chicago resident, and my team at the Chicago Department of Public Health is working in close coordination with the CDC, the Illinois Department of Public Health, the Cook County Department of Public Health, and many other partners at the local, state, and national level to ensure a coordinated response. I particularly want to thank Mayor Lightfoot and her office, who have been in constant communication and fully engaged in supporting our collaborative efforts to keep the public safe and informed. I will tell you some more about the patient in a minute, but I want to start by stating clearly that this is a single travel-associated case, not a local emergency. We obviously take emerging viruses very seriously, and there are still many unanswered questions about this novel virus. But I can reassure you that even with this Chicago case, the health risk to the general public from novel coronavirus remains low at this time, both nationally and in Chicago. Chicago has been building its public health preparedness systems for years, and we have a solid response plan in place. There is no need for the general public to change their behavior in any way based on this news. The patient is a woman in her 60s. Most importantly, I'm pleased to report that she is clinically doing well and is in stable condition. She traveled to Wuhan, China in late December and returned to the U.S. on January 13th. A few days after arriving home, the patient began to feel unwell. She called ahead to alert her doctor to her illness, rather than just presenting to a clinic or emergency department. This is exactly what any potentially ill returning traveler from Wuhan should do: call ahead and seek medical care. This patient's doctor's office appropriately asked about travel history and quickly put a mask on the patient, helping limit the potential risk of spreading infection. Her doctor then referred her directly to a hospital with infection control capabilities for further workup. Again, this is exactly what we've been educating local healthcare providers to do. Ask about travel history and reach out to your local public health department to discuss any ill patients with recent travel to Wuhan, China. Hospital staff then placed her in the appropriate setting for infection control, performed a full clinical workup, including ruling out more common viruses like influenza, and worked with public health to arrange testing for novel coronavirus at CDC. The patient is clinically doing well. She is currently in stable condition and remains hospitalized primarily for infection control. While we will be following her course closely, the patient's story so far highlights the way public health messaging and awareness are working locally, as well as the importance of coordination and awareness in the clinical setting. The patient has been very helpful as we've been gathering information about her contacts in recent days. She was not symptomatic when flying. And based on what we know now about this virus, our concern for transmission before symptoms develop is low. So that is reassuring. She has limited close contacts, all of whom are currently well and who will be monitored closely for symptoms. We will also be monitoring the healthcare workers who have cared for and continue to care for this patient. Since returning from China, the patient has had very limited movement outside her home. Now that this test is positive, we will continue to collect and confirm even more information about her activities and contacts. But we know already, for example, that she has not taken public transportation. She has not attended any large gatherings. And actually, to our best knowledge at this point, she has not had extended close contact with anyone outside her home since returning from China and prior to admission to the healthcare system. So this is all very reassuring in terms of infection risk to the general public, which again remains low nationally and locally. Anytime a new virus emerges, we are reminded of how small our world is and of how critical it is to invest in building strong public health systems. I want to thank the federal, state, and many local partners who have worked together and prepared not just to respond to this case, but over many years to ensure the Chicago area is well prepared to respond to emerging infectious diseases. I'd now like to hand it over to Dr. Jennifer Layden, the Chief Medical Officer and State Epidemiologist at the Illinois Department of Public Health.
You're listening to live coverage of a city news conference on this after the first case of the coronavirus found in the city of Chicago, a patient who had flown in from China.
A-R-W-A-D-Y.
She's spelling her name now for the reporters that are writing it down.
And this is Allison Arwady, the Commissioner of Department of Public Health. And now we go to the second.
Thank you, Allison. Hi, my name is Jen Layden. I'm the Chief Medical Officer and State Epidemiologist for the Illinois Department of Public Health. Yes, Jennifer, J-E-N-N-I-F-E-R, Layden, L-A-Y-D-E-N. I would like to start by thanking our governor, Governor Pritzker, state leadership, and IDPH's director, Dr. Ngazi Ezike, as well as the Chicago Department of Public Health, other local health departments in Illinois, healthcare partners across the state, and the CDC for the coordinated and collaborative work on this rapidly evolving situation. It is because of the diligent work by healthcare professionals that we were able to identify this confirmed travel-associated case of the novel coronavirus quickly, while also taking measures to prevent others from being exposed. IDPH has been closely monitoring this international outbreak and began proactively preparing in the event the outbreak expanded. We began providing CDC guidance, resources, and recommendations to local health departments, hospitals, and clinicians across the state and developed a dedicated web page with resources for the public and health partners. We have sent several health alerts and updates to local health departments, clinicians, and hospitals across the state, and held a webinar for local health departments this week, which had over 200 participants, and a webinar for clinicians and hospitals, which had over 500 participants. We will continue with frequent, scheduled communication with local health departments, clinical partners, and other key state partners. Coordination between the hospital, local, and state health department allowed specimens to be shipped and tested at the CDC quickly. This coordination between providers, hospitals, and public health is critical for our continued effort to best respond and reduce further transmission. The Illinois Department of Public Health will continue to partner with the CDC and has invited a CDC team out to our state to assist with this investigation. IDPH is ready to bring testing online to our state labs once the test is available from the CDC. We will continue to communicate and coordinate with our local health departments and numerous clinical partners as we respond to this evolving situation. I will now turn this over to Andrew Velasquez from the Chicago Department of Aviation.
And so that was Jennifer Layden, the chief medical officer for the Illinois Department of Public Health. You heard from the city chief as well, as we get a rundown on what's going on. Basically, it's a lot what Dr. Most told you. This person came in. She showed signs of it. She went to the doctor's office, and they're checking to see who she's been in contact with. But this isn't the sort of thing that we should be overly concerned about. It's something that has now come to our airport in our city.
How about that? And she was in Wuhan, China. I mean, that was the place in December, and did everything. I thought that the presentation by the first two doctors was really good. Answered a lot of questions. It's good to know that those people are on the ground. And the other takeaway for me was, Steve, that whatever this is and however important it is, and I think you're absolutely right about how you sort of characterize it, it's good to know that if something really worse is out there, that these people are in place, that they've been doing this sort of groundwork. So this might just be a little thing relative to the number of people in Chicago, one. But what if something big were to happen? What if something massive were to outbreak? It's good to know that these people are there, that right. They've been doing this sort of groundwork all along.
We rip on government all of the time.
I'm telling you.
These are the people doing the work.
Yeah, that you don't even think about. And so you know how they do emergency preparedness for a lot of things, terrible car crashes, terrible snowstorms, stuff like that. You don't think, see, or hear much about this sort of thing. But you did get sort of a look into the people that are in place and what it is that they do. And that sounded pretty good to me. It's 10:42. So this may shock you, but I've decided to delay the doomsday conversation we were going to have with the scientists with the atomic clock about the doomsday thing. We'll do that next week, but they say that it's a little closer.
Are you going to wait for it to move even more?
Well, maybe it'll back off, but I think we've done enough doom and gloom for a while here. And 1 hour from now, we're going to be doing our Bright Side of Life segment, where you'll call in, tell us some good news in your world while you are smiling, and we will smile with you. It's 10:42 on WGN. Give me a minute here to also give a quick plug again to our friend Lou Manfredini. You know him as Mr. Fix-It on the radio from House Smarts Radio. He does that early Saturday morning show here and pops on a lot of our shows to help us with our home improvement or fix-it questions. The National Italian American Sports Hall of Fame is giving its Friendship Award next month to Lou Manfredini of WGN Radio. Appearing at this event is Ray Boom Boom Mancini, John Seda, the actor, Larry Holmes, the former heavyweight champion of the world, and Lou Manfredini. I think they should all get in a ring and just throw a few. It would be interesting to me. I mean, it's a boxing event. They're going to have several fights, and they've got some of the best fighters who've ever put on the gloves. Lou has never been more fit now that he's on that Seattle Sutton's healthy eating. He's probably checking in at around 198. I think if we threw some gloves and a mouth guard on that guy, he'd be good to go. I think Lou could handle himself. Who wants to see Lou fight in this thing? Raise your hands.
The toughest thing would be the mouth guard, really, because
Lou'd be taking it out going, right. Hey, I've got an idea.
Hey, here's how you should punch me.
It's a right from Boom Boom, a left from Boom Boom. Manfredini, he's taking out his mouth guard.
No, I'm not a boxer, I know, and you are. But
let me just talk to you a little bit about the mat. What I would do, Thursday, February 27th, the doors open at 6. The first bout is at 7, or about 7. So 6 p.m. the doors open. 7, and they're going to have food and beverages and some mingling. I imagine there'll be some silent auctioning. It's an award ceremony, but it's also a boxing thing, and I've never seen one of these things. So B and I are going to go, and I recommend that you do too. It sounds like fun, doesn't it? And by the way, the proceeds for this go to youth boxing clubs, which is not on your radar, is it? But it sure is on the radar of those kids, and it really helps them. For tickets, call 312-226-5566, 312-226-5566. A night at the fights! Amateur boxing tournament! Lou Manfredini with a left!
My sister and I earned a vow.
So you knew this one right away, huh, Mary Vandeveld?
But my sister is now, unfortunately.
Because you know the movie Chicago?
Oh, I love that. Catherine
Zeta-Jones. I know it's sad, of course, but a fact
is still a fact. And now all that remains is the remains of a perfect double act.
I guess we don't get to be surprised that Renee Zellweger can sing in Judy, because she was pretty good in this movie too, huh?
It's well with you people. First I...
So that's Catherine Zeta-Jones, as we just sampled this week some fun movie stars who aren't known as singers who sing pretty well.
Okay, don't you think some of these people were before, in like in high school, they were singers before they were actors? And
yeah,
actresses,
I guess so.
You know?
Well, I guess when they're coming up, they really are multi-talented
people.
Yeah. And then they sort of branch off, so you're an actor and you're a singer. Some of them, but not many anymore, have a foot in both camp. I mean, if I could sing as well as Catherine Zeta-Jones did there, and I was as attractive as Catherine Zeta-Jones, I don't know, I guess I could be either. Maybe I'd want to be a singer. But she's obviously an actress. Okay, so here's another one for you. Tell me who this is.
Somewhere beyond the sea, somewhere waiting for me.
Do you recognize that voice?
My lover stands on golden sands and watches the ships that go sailing somewhere.
Well, he sounds like Bublé, but it is not.
Kevin Spacey.
Watching for me.
Wow.
If I could fly like birds on a high, then straight to her arms I'd go sailing.
Okay, let's go to so this is one that was on Elif's mind the other day, and we were doing this, and she says, well, is Marilyn Monroe in this camp too? And then we said, yeah, right?
A kiss on the hand may be quite continental, but diamonds are a girl's best friend. A kiss may be grand, but it won't pay the rental on your humble flat, or help you at the automat. Men grow cold.
Not too bad, huh?
Grow old, and we all lose our charms in the end. But square cut or pear shape, these rocks don't lose their shape. Diamonds are a girl's best friend.
Kind of makes you want to go back and watch the movie, doesn't it?
Beats Happy Birthday.
Yeah. See, that's the thing. You think about that, and then
that's all you think of.
Every now and then, if we're watching an old Marilyn Monroe movie on where she sings, I think I've regained some respect for her talent. I mean, you know, she's a tragic character. She's this iconic figure, but. The lady did have some chops. Okay, let's do one more. Maybe two. So are we on number five there, Ms. Garris? Do I got a thumbs up over there? You ready? 3, 2, 1, hit it. You'll never get this one unless you know the movie.
Yoko Ono?
It's not Will Ferrell.
When
you go to the sites and they say, wow, can that movie star sing? You'll often see Kate Winslet's name. Picture that, huh? 10:52 on WGN. Jan, what did you want to say? You're on the air. Hi, Jan. What can we do for you?
Oh, just that Catherine Zeta-Jones, that wasn't strange that she was in that musical Chicago, because she was a musical star in England before she came here.
No kidding. I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm.
I got to renew my subscription to People magazine. I'm not good at this stuff. Very nice. No, she started out as musicals in the UK before mm-hmm. we discovered her here, huh?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Makes sense. Thanks for the call. You go back and watch Chicago, and I was watching it online the other day, and doggone it, that lady can sing and dance. I mean, she's got the stuff of musicals. You know who's fun? Let's do Meryl Streep. Meryl Streep can sing legitimately well, or well enough for what she's asked to sometimes in movies. But did you watch that movie last year, the year before, where she did Florence Foster Jones, the wealthy socialite who... is able to get singing lessons. And she's so wealthy and influential that everybody sort of accommodates her.
That is a great movie.
Nobody tells her how bad she is. I really wanted to like this movie. Her singing, though, was so bad in the movie that sometimes, as good as she was at it, at singing badly, I wasn't enjoying what I was hearing.
Yeah, but the Hugh Grant character was so good.
He is. He is. Their relationship is spectacular. It's a very fun movie, funny movie, too. And I think if you sing this badly, you actually have to be able to sing pretty well to pull this off. So here's the clip from that movie. And she's on stage. The whole audience is filled with this beautiful opera hall. The men have tuxedos. The lady have dresses. They can barely contain their snickers. If you have pets, you may want to... So the pianist is pounding away, and he's got a troubled look on his face. And Florence Foster has no clue how bad she is. See what I mean? You can only...
Wow.
You can only listen to so much of that.
Makes me want to watch the movie.
So is it harder to sing bad than it is to sing good?
I'm making the point, Steve, that I think it's equally... I think that that demonstrated some singing chops right there. Jan wanted to say something. You're on WGN. Hi, Jan. Good morning.
Good morning. A lot of those stars have been subbed by someone else doing the singing, and they... like Audrey Hepburn and Marilyn Monroe was substituted by someone else doing the singing.
Yeah, yeah.
And so you can't always, you know, rely on them doing the singing.
Fair enough, yeah. I think I've avoided that trap here, but I take your point. Thanks for the call. Brenda wanted to say something on, too. Hi, Brenda, you're on the air.
Hi there. On that Meryl Streep movie where she sings so horribly, and which I believe would be intentionally,
yeah,
the young man who plays the piano, that is one of those actors on The Big Bang Theory, and he legitimately plays the piano like that. That's him.
Oh, playing. No kidding. Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
I can't remember the young man's name.
You know, he looked familiar to me, but I don't watch Big Bang Theory, and I thought, whoever, I wasn't paying any attention. That's him, huh?
Yeah.
And he's really playing the piano there, huh?
Yes, he sure. Yes, he is. Is that? I don't know which kid that is.
Yeah, I'll look it up. Producer Aleph, who was that playing the piano, please? In just a moment. Plus, we need to look up the word pettifoggery or whatever it was that John Roberts used the other day. We're watching a lot of stuff for you today. It's 11:09. Hard to watch anything with the fog, but that's just one of the things we're keeping an eye on. The news, weather, traffic, and sports. We had that press conference live from the city about the coronavirus. One patient in Chicago, she went through O'Hare. She had been in China, in Wuhan. Where is she right now? They're not saying. We don't need to know. They said it's... In fact, Dr. Kevin Most said if you had $1 million to bet and you went to Las Vegas, it would be a safe bet to put it on nobody is in any harm's way, even at O'Hare, even in the international terminal. But the city does seem to be prepared for an outbreak of anything, and it sounds like all of the right forces were marshaled in this case. She's been holding on for a few minutes here. Hey, Paula, you're on WGN Radio. This is John Williams. Good morning. What can we do for you?
Good morning, John and everyone. I wish everyone shalom. I'm the lady who sings the blessing song to you now and then when I call in. I wanted to notify you again of and your audience of a concert that Roosevelt University is going to be giving in their downtown campus. It's called Always Look on the Bright Side of Life.
How about that?
Yeah, how about that? That sounds familiar. It's going to be on Tuesday night, April 21st at 7:30 in their Gons Hall in the main building on Michigan Avenue.
So what are they singing? All Monty Python or just what are they doing?
I really don't know. It's going to be a choral concert and that's the title. So I thought it would really catch your interest. and perhaps others as well. I'm an alumni of Roosevelt, and they have of their music school, and they have a wonderful program, wonderful music department. And I'm a former Chicago Public School music teacher as well. I taught general music at Senn High School for two years.
Do you know? Did they use the auditorium there, the auditorium theater?
No. That's primarily, I think, commercial use. This is in their own Gans Hall, who is named after Rudolph Gans, who helped start the Chicago Musical College, which became affiliated with Roosevelt years ago.
I see. Okay.
And I attended that school. And they're wonderful, wonderful performers, wonderful talent.
Okay, so they're performing a show titled Bright Side of Life.
Yes, always look on the bright side of life, John. That's for you.
Well, I'll keep that in mind. And what's the date on that again?
April Monday.
What if they're doing like all songs that are upbeat and cheery? Or
I imagine so.
Which would be a good concert
Tuesday,
to go to.
Tuesday, April 21st at 7:30 p.m.
Very good.
The conductor is Mark Crayton, C-R-A-Y-T-O-N.
All right. Paula, good for you. Thanks for the heads up on that.
I wish everybody, may you be blessed as you go on your way. May you be guided in peace. May faith and compassion find their way to every soul. May this be all your blessing. Amen.
Call again, Paula.
Thank you, John.
Bye now. You know, everybody should do that. When you call in, you have to sign off with a signature song. And it has to be cheery and upbeat and hopeful. We'll play The Bright Side of Life, Monty Python's Flying Circus, as the theme for our segment that we do Fridays around 11:45. That's about half hour away. It's 11:13 now. By the way, we were featuring some songs that movie stars sing, and dang, they sing them well in some movies. And I said that one that I really like was Sweeney Todd. The crazy guy. Who's the crazy guy? Edward Scissorhands, all that. Who am I thinking of?
Johnny Depp.
But this is a good one. This is another male singer, and boy, does he rock this number. Any good at this one, Mary Vandeveld?
No idea.
He's really good.
Not Jack Black.
It is.
It is?
Yep. Jack Black.
Really? Sugar.
I love his voice.
School of Rock, stuff like that.
Yeah, the only reason I guess him is because he always is all over the place with his octaves.
Yes.
So I thought, well, could be him.
Sugar. 11:14 on WGN. I just saw Sam Panayanovich stroll through Ellis Bay. He's got some of those strange bets. This is what people do. So the week before the Super Bowl, they announce here are, I think they're called the prop bets. One of them I saw, I don't know if Sam has this one, is what's the over-under on how many dogs will appear in commercials? And then you can bet on that. He's got some of these crazy ones for us. Today's the last day the House managers present their case to the Senate. It's hard to believe that thing is still going on, but Adam Schiff and the rest of them still are. They'll get underway in just a couple of minutes. The first day, the Supreme Court Chief Justice John Roberts said, "I want no more pettifoggery from you people." Producer Aleph, what is pettifoggery, please? Sounds like my computer crashed. Sam Panayanovich, you don't happen to know what pettifoggery is, do
you? I have no idea. Sorry.
All right, we'll get you that. One more time. Producer Aleph, what's pettifoggery, please?
Placing undue emphasis on petty details, John.
Undue emphasis on... Oh, so he wasn't admonishing them for being mean to each other, but for just being unduly emphasizing petty details, petty foggery. That sort of makes sense. We got a lot of foggery out here. How was it coming in to the studio?
Terrible. Worst day is to drive. I mean, look around you. Yeah. Can you see 10 feet behind you?
No.
No.
Out these windows?
Right.
No.
Well, you'd have to have eyes in the back of your head, first of all.
Well, I think what he meant is if I turned around, Steve.
Oh, I'm sorry.
To be clear about that.
But if anybody has eyes in the back of their head, it's you. By the way, question for you. Somebody asked me this last night. They said, ask King John, what was it like to be around when Michael Jordan was good? Somebody asked me that last night, and I said, you know what? I'll
ask
him.
You weren't? You're too young for that?
I was born in 89, so I don't remember. By the time he hits 98, he's got six rings, right? But what was it like to be...
Did we appreciate what we had?
What was it like to be around when he was the best? I don't know what that's like. I think you do.
I covered him when he was a rookie. I was covering them, well, for GN, actually, up in Milwaukee. So when they would play the Bucks, I would interview Michael Jordan and cover the Bulls.
I remember, I wish I had a good snappy answer for you, but I will say this. I do think we had a sense of appreciation. We're watching Babe Ruth in real time. We're watching, I don't know, who are those people that you look back and go, how great would it be to go back in time and watch Babe Ruth play? We were watching Babe Ruth play baseball.
Walter Payton.
Basketball.
Michael Jordan.
Kind of. Michael Jordan might even transcend Walter Payton and the rest of them. His career was longer, and he's got more championship rings, and he just did things you weren't seeing before. And I only went to one Bulls game in that run. We didn't have tickets. For a lot of that time, I was living in Peoria. But I do remember one time I drove up from Peoria. I was doing the morning radio show, and I had to drive back and be on the air at 5 o'clock in Peoria the next morning. So I drove up to Chicago, got my dad. Somehow I got tickets. We went to a Bulls game just for the purpose of saying we saw it in person. And then after the game, 10:30, dad goes back to Joliet, and I drove back to Peoria to do my show. That's how I wanted to at least say I got the box checked. And the Bulls wiped out New Jersey or New York or somebody. It wasn't even close. And we were sitting in the roof of the thing. But every seat was filled. Everybody was digging it. There was a play. This is the play that I remember. It's the only thing I remember on the floor that day. There's a ball in the right corner. Michael Jordan is near the ball. And as before the ball bounces out of bounds, he just reaches out with his hand and palming it, grabs it. Like,
come on.
You and I would a tennis ball. It's going on. He just goes,
a golf ball.
I know, like he had glue on his fingers. And it was the weirdest thing to remember about Michael Jordan, but it was like so athletic, so cool. You realized how large and strong he is. And I don't know, it just, the crowd went, whoa. Like we've seen him dunk before, but that was just odd. And it was fun. And that was the ooh moment for us at that game. Then I got in the car and drove home. But you knew you had to see one if you could. And by the way, one last thing about that. I believe it was Bob Green. Somebody wrote, it could have been Mary Schmick. There was some columnist in the Tribune. And they said, if you have a ticket to a Bulls, if you have Bulls season tickets, you need to share one. Because people will say, I lived in Chicago while Jordan was playing. I didn't go to a game. But you didn't have tickets. If you have a bunch, you should share one.
He could fly. And at one point in his career, he was averaging 37 points a game. 37 points a game is ridiculous. That's ridiculous.
Dave, you're on WGN. Good morning. Hey, Dave.
Hi, John. Back when they were building the United Center, was going to at that time be called the New Chicago Stadium, I produced a video that was to sell the skyboxes. And Jordan appeared in it. We shot him up at the arena in Detroit in one of their skyboxes. And I had asked if he would not wear a white shirt because it bloomed on video.
Yeah.
We get there, and he had a white shirt on, immaculately dressed. And so I was introduced to him, and he shook my hand, and I mentioned the white shirt, and he looked at me with this cute little grin and said, I'm on the cover of Gentleman's Quarterly this month. I always wear white shirts.
So this is going to be your problem to fix, huh?
yeah, it was. And we did the whole thing. I mean, it was all about 20-second take, but we did it in one take. But you know, you got to do a cover take. And I said, that was real good, Mr. Jordan. Let's just do a second one just to make sure. And again, with that twinkle, he goes, I don't do second takes. It was just cute.
Yeah, well, that sounds like him, doesn't it?
See, it's funny you say it was cute, because if he was half as good, we'd be talking about what a jerk he was.
If it was me, it'd be obnoxious. But again, I probably wouldn't have been as cute as he was. Dave, I got to go. Thanks for the call. Sam Panionovich follows sports wagering. We asked him to come in and watch the prop bets for us, right?
Right.
So what are you looking at?
Well, I'm looking
What's
at this
prop
current...
bet? How did these start?
So these started, actually, you remember 1985. We're going back in the time machine again. The Chicago Bears, when they were in the Super Bowl against the New England Patriots, when the Chicago Bears were really, really good. The first big prop bet was at Caesar's Palace in Las Vegas. Will Refrigerator Perry score a touchdown?
Really? That was the first bizarre bet.
And it opens up at 20 to 1. So $100 bet times 20, it's a good amount of money. It goes from 20 to 18 to 16 to 13.
Meaning that as we get closer to the game, people are starting to think.
People are hammering this bet. They're hammering it. They're betting everything. They're betting 20. They're betting 50. They're betting 100.
So then the odds go down because if it does happen, the bookmakers don't want to pay that high a multiple.
It's a market. It's like the stock market, only it's sports betting. It's the same thing, the same principles. So everybody's betting this prop bet. And what happens in the Super Bowl, they don't give the ball to 34,
I know.
Walter Payton.
I know.
They give it to 72, who rumbles in the end zone. And every casino in Vegas that is taking this bet has to now pay these ridiculous odds out.
Do you think those two events are related? That is, did the Bears know how much money was riding on that? Did Mike Ditka have a bet? Because if Ditka had money on that and he gives the ball to Refrigerator, that's a scandal!
But the maximum bet is like $100. You think Mike Ditka would risk it all for $100?
Yes!
No, and that's, you know, I'm glad you asked that because when this got legalized, oh, you got a break, sorry.
No, I don't. I'm wiggling my wrist, but we'll break in a minute. Finish the story.
So, I forgot where I was. I was thrown off.
When this got legalized, I was insinuating that maybe a coach or a player would throw the game for the bet.
Right, okay, so on May 18, PASPA says you can now, PASPA gets struck down, you can now bet on sports. The biggest question I got was, well, what will stop players from, you know, throwing games? And I thought, I don't think that'll ever happen. But now you look at the Astros situation with the knocking on garbage cans and, you know, signaling on the scoreboard and all that. The integrity of the game was the biggest issue. Everybody thought the leagues would be unable to control it. And you're seeing that right now with the I mean, that they changed baseball with what they did.
The Astros did with
their
cheating.
Yeah.
Changed baseball going forward,
yes,
maybe, because
right.
It had been happening. And who knows on with how many teams, right? So are you worried then that legalized wagering is in fact going to imperil the integrity of the sports more than you thought it was going to?
It's an interesting question now. I mean, if you're making $15 million as a baseball player, do you care about 10 grand here and there? I don't know. These are the questions I ask, but I never thought we'd be talking about World Series champions cheating at the pinnacle of their sport.
What was your recommendation for MLB then? What should they do about this?
I don't know.
Bertrand wanted all the individual players found and hit with large sticks. He wanted them all malleted. I said, I don't think that's fair, reasonable, or you can even ascertain who was cheating and who wasn't. Steve seems to think that you can. I think the penalty just needs to go to the owner and the managers, which they did, but ridiculously low. $5 million? Are you kidding me? Steve's got $5 million.
You want $5 million again this weekend?
I thought, if really, Major League Baseball, if this is a stain on your sport, and Sam, you're probably right.
There have been stains on the sport forever, though.
Okay,
I mean, how fun was 98 with Sammy Sosa hitting 66 home runs?
Do you think if we could go back to 97 and they could change it, would they?
The steroids brought the sport back. They literally brought it back.
Do you think so? Do you think that steroids...
100%.
But there's a news click.
And then all those guys retire, and then we knock them down.
There was no fallout after Sosa and Maguire were in that home run battle? I don't remember.
Huge fallout. But remember, what was it like being at batting practice on Waveland Avenue when Sammy Sosa was hitting home runs?
It was a lot
Everybody
of fun.
Everybody was there.
I know, but that's like the short-term fix without regard to the long-term health.
There was a wider reaction to this, though, with those two, with Cora and was it Beltran being fired?
Yeah.
You know, the would-be managers and the manager. I think... That shows that other teams are taking it seriously, too.
Yeah. We need to pause. We actually have time for a couple quick calls here. And then we got to get to the prop bets. You've got So the money was on Fridge. Walter Payton doesn't score the touchdown. William the Refrigerator Perry does, which was maybe not fair to Walter Payton. I don't know what fair is. I mean, the team won, and he didn't score a touchdown in the Super Bowl. But that seems to be a small slight, considering how great he was. But then there's other prop bets since then, right?
I'll give you a quick example. Total points by Robbie Gould. former Chicago Bear kicker. How many points will he have? Field goal is three. Well,
he's
going to
be in the next. He's going to be in the Super Bowl.
The Bears cut him. They didn't think he was any good.
Okay, has that been in the papers?
Total
too?
Points 8.5. That's the
for Robbie Gold
over under. So if he makes three field goals, 9 points. That's over. That's the number. Robbie Gold 8.5 points.
Where do I go, producer LF2 line? Let's talk to Joe. Hey, Joe, you're on WGN. Good morning.
Yes, I'm curious regarding sports betting. If someone placed a legal bet in Nevada on baseball against the team that cheated, and now it's been proven that they cheated, can they sue to get their money back?
I texted this question to Sam this week.
Joe, it's a great call.
What if I bet on a team that we later find out cheated? Then what happens to the validity of that bet?
You said, what if I bet on the Dodgers to win the World Series?
Exactly.
The Dodgers lost to the Astros in 2017. And you said, if I bet on the Dodgers and I lost.
But now baseball said that the Astros cheated. Do I get my money
back?
That
was your question. Do I get my money? Sportsbooks would say no. Sportsbooks would say take it up with the league.
We'll pick it up here in a minute. John Williams here, following the sports wagering world is Sam Panayanovich. He visits with us frequently. Now and again, you hear his voice on our radio station, and he co-hosts actually one of the podcasts that we do here, Legal Face-Off, or MCs it, or something like that.
MCs right? is a great word.
Yeah. By the way, a couple quick calls about something that you brought up. Gail, you're on WGN. Hey, Gail, you're on the air. What can we do for you?
Yeah, I just wanted to say that Michael Jordan, in the time that he was in his prime, I was on a tour in Florida, and people from all over the world, you know, go to Florida, and on the ship was people from Sweden. They couldn't speak English, and they were asking people, where are you from? And we said, Chicago. And these Swedish people with broken English said, Michael Jordan.
Yeah.
And it was all and then they were like, and they were smiling, and they were Michael Jordan, and they wanted to practically touch me as though I was a representative of Jordan. Same thing happened 2 years later when we were in Mexico City, and we couldn't speak Spanish, and they couldn't speak English, and we were talking to a couple that could. And then they were saying, and we were at the same food stand, and they said, we said, we're from Chicago. And the guy goes, Michael Jordan.
It's the international language. Two words. Yeah.
The only thing we could connect with anybody in the world was Michael Jordan. He was famous.
Yeah, like few people have been in our lifetime. I mean, you probably count on two hands the number of people that transcend Muhammad Ali, whoever the Pope is at that time. I mean, Jordan is in that arena.
Just the basketball player from North Carolina. Everybody knows 23, ironically, because of the Olympics. Because finally the NBA was letting players go back to Olympic play.
Oh.
The Dream Team in 92. That's why he's the best. He took the game from America to around the world.
Probably didn't hurt that he was selling Hanes underwear and Coca-Cola and Nike shoes and
Gatorade.
Stuff like that, too. And he was always a positive, shiny face. And we were the beneficiaries of that, I think, that way. If you said to people in Mexico or China or Florida right now, Chicago, what comes to mind? It might have been Michael Jordan.
Al Capone.
But Al Capone and the gangsters, which is weird because we don't even think about that. And it's not really a component of our personality. It's not contemporary at all. And then crime. I think people think of Chicago as a place where there's a lot of gunfire. We need another Michael Jordan. Real quick call before we go back to the prop bets. Hey, Chuck, jump in there. You're on the air. Hi.
Hello. Last summer, Dennis McKinnon, who's on the 85 Bears, came out with a book about the 85 Bears, and he swore 100% guaranteed that Mike Ditka had a prop bet that William Perry would score the first touchdown.
Maybe.
Well, I get your point, Sam, that What a stupid bet, because you can't make that much money on it relative to what you gain if you play the game
fairly.
If
you get caught, too, you're cooked. You're cooked.
Do you buy that, Chuck? Does that sound true?
You believe that, Chuck?
He was doing radio interviews, and that was the one story he was telling to sell the book.
McKinnon, huh? Yeah. Yep. Well, that's a good way to sell a book, I'll say that.
There's been a lot of athletes that have said a lot of things that weren't true. Let's be clear about that.
It's a great story. Thanks for the call, man.
Yep.
Have a good day. Prop bets. Okay, what have we got?
All right, I told you earlier, Robbie Gould, total points, 8.5. Did you make up your mind yet? Over, under?
I'm going to go the over.
Okay, and you're one of the greatest kickers that has ever graced Joliet.
I did kick for both Manuka and the Wolves of Joliet Junior College.
Joliet area, sorry. So Robbie Gould, total points, 8.5. So the point spread on the game, Kansas City, Las Vegas says Kansas City is a one-point favorite. So essentially, flip the coin. It's going to be a toss-up game. The total in the game is 54 or 55, depending on which gas station that I go to, right?
So 27-28 is 55.
Correct.
So does that sound like a score?
You nailed it. That is the projected final score. Kansas City 28, San Francisco 27. That's what the odds makers are telling you. Of course, it won't land that way. Something wild will happen in this game, and that's how these games go.
Would you take the over or the under on that?
Everybody's picking the over, and that makes me scared. Everybody is saying the over, the over, the over. Patrick Mahomes, Kansas City, fireworks, pow, 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 pow. And they said that last year, and the final score was, 13-3. It was one of the worst games we ever watched, and that total was 60.
Are you kidding? Who played last year? Has that been published?
Patriots and Rams. Uh-huh. You know more than you let on.
I didn't even know that. You know, they ought
to write
these things down.
That's what makes me nervous, because when everybody says pow, 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 usually we're out of gunpowder.
Yeah. Okay, give me another prop bet.
Let's see. Let me pull up the sheet. There are literally 37 pages of props. First rushing attempt by Jimmy Garoppolo, who played his high school football in Illinois, went to Eastern Illinois. First rushing attempt, Jimmy Garoppolo, 2.5 yards, over or under?
Really?
First rush. Now, a sack is negative. That counts.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
No, but a scramble does, too, and usually then they get past the line of scrimmage.
Do they, though? What if he gets 1 or 2 yards? Then you lose.
Going to do the over.
Okay, you're going to take the over there. Longest touchdown of the game. This is a fun one because this lasts the whole game. Longest touchdown of the game, 47.5 yards.
Really?
Yes.
Really?
So you're rooting for 50 yards.
If you take that one,
How about a kick return or a punt return?
I know, Mr. Pow, Pow, Pow. I'm going to go under. It'll be a great game, blah, 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 but 47, you don't see that often in the Super Bowl. I'll do the under.
First score of the game, touchdown, any other score?
Oh, really? I get any other score?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's a field goal or safety.
Any other score pays you 1.6, too. So 100 makes you 160 if you take any other score. Field goal, safety.
I don't know. Steve, you got an opinion on this one?
Well, I was thinking safety right away. The Bears started theirs with a kick return, right?
How about that?
Yes,
now, Steve brings that up. Devin Hester.
Was fun.
That year when Devin Hester ran the opening kickoff back.
And fun fact about that, the Bears have not scored a point since.
Devin Hester opened up at 25-1 to score the game's first touchdown.
Are you kidding?
25-1.
That's all. I mean, I know he was sensational that year, but you think
those
he'd be
100-1. So 25-1. Those were pretty good odds.
And then he did.
He took the opening kickoff back.
People must have been going crazy that.
We were. I was at the game, and then we stopped going crazy because Peyton Manning tore us apart.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, so we are on, we did the 47 yards. What was the one we were just doing?
47 yards, longest touchdown.
Touchdown,
first score. Touchdown, any other score?
I'm going to go with it's less dramatic than you want it to be. I'll be under. It's not the 7, it's the 3 of the 2.
This is the most important one.
Okay.
What color will the Gatorade be that is dumped on the winning coach? Actually, the language is what color liquid in case it's water. Clear is an option. Orange, yellow, blue, purple, red. What color is the Gatorade?
I don't know what they normally throw these days. I like orange Gatorade. Aren't those containers usually orange?
Usually a bucket with a lot of ice and a liquid that gets dumped on the coach.
Yeah.
What color is the liquid?
I got to
bet on
that.
This is one of the most popular props.
Is it really?
This and the coin toss.
I also saw, will there be butt cleavage by J-Lo?
Mm-hmm. Will J-Lo wear a hat? Will J-Lo show cleavage? Will J-Lo do this? Will J-Lo do that?
Okay, so I'm going to go orange.
Okay. You're literally just throwing darts here, and that's the best part about it.
That's what, really? Do you have some, should I be more studied on the color of the beverage?
The point is, all you're trying to do if you're a bookmaker is give me more cereal in the cereal aisle. The more options I have, the more I'll bet.
People will bet on the coin flip.
It's one of the loudest moments in Vegas.
Isn't that the dumbest bet? That's like in Uncut Gems where they bet on the opening tip and the guy looks at him and goes, that's the stupidest bet you could make.
I have been in a sports book in Vegas during the Super Bowl. When the coin flip lands, there is elation and there is, oh, and a sports book will be up or down $30,000 because everybody bets tails.
Like, really?
Everybody bets tails. We're talking 70% of the money that comes in is on tails.
Well, then I would bet heads just because it's...
It's a coin! You have no idea. But people bet it, and that's the point.
Well, it is kind of fun, and I think what that does is it enables people who don't know what the rushing statistics... I don't know anything about football, but I know 50-50. That's fun. Now it's just fun, right? That's a fun bet.
National anthem length, by the way, minute 59.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Boy, who's singing it again?
Demi Lovato.
She's... tight. She's. I don't think she's a show off. I'm going to go under.
You never know. Sometimes they hold free for 20 seconds.
Is that what they do?
The whole bat.
Land of the free.
They hold it. Yeah. Your glass is shattering around you.
And you're like,
looking at your
under,
phone.
Under.
No!
Under. Cutter Mike.
And the home of the brave. And you're like, oh, I lost by a second.
Thank you. The funny thing is, too, basketball, football, baseball, where some bizarre play happens at the end. The guy dunks when he could dribble out or something like
Totals
that.
Totals 207. It's 105 to 102. And at the end of the game, somebody goes on the floor and just windmills a dunk. You think it doesn't matter, but it does.
And all of a sudden, money changes hands.
Mm-hmm.
Got another bet for me, Sam?
First rushing attempt. No. Let me answer that with a story. Peyton Manning, total yards 1 year. Was 2.5 total rushing yards. I don't have another bet, so I'm going to punt here. He's on 4 at the end of the game. And what does he do when they're in the victory formation? He takes two steps back
and takes
and
a
takes
knee.
A knee.
And that's minus 2 yards.
And he lands on 2. So if you had over 2.5, it was literally in the bag. They call hike. 2 yards back,
knee,
2 yards,
and
you lose.
You lost $4,000.
Or you win.
Yeah,
or you win.
Which way you take it. All right, Sam, well, we'll follow up on where the odds are on these. Maybe the game, when is the game going to be?
Next Sunday, not this
published?
Sunday.
Right.
Next Sunday.
Well, then maybe you come by next Friday as
maybe,
well.
Maybe I will.
All right. Sam Panionovich watches the world of wagering for us. It's 11:43. The bright side of life is your chance to tell us some good news in your world. Call me right now. Sam, you might want to kick it off for us here. 312-981-7200. Something you're happy about. Can be large, can be small. But we want to start the weekend, especially with a good grief. Every time I turn around, the fog downtown Chicago is getting so much worse. Now let's put a bright side on it now. 312-981-7200. Call or text right now. By the way, more than 26 million customers have their DNA information and databases maintained by the four leading DNA testing companies. DNA testing companies could be as vulnerable to data breaches as they are as any other company. And DNA information could be a tempting target for hackers who would sell this information on the dark web. Who knows what they would do with it? It is important to understand how cybercrime affects your daily life. Identity theft is a serious issue. Someone's identity is stolen every 2 seconds. I've just been mentioning as I do these commercials lately how I've been filling out some online forms lately. And when they ask for information, be it a private organization or a public one, I get nervous about it. At least I used to. But now that I have LifeLock, I feel like, okay, if something goes wrong, I've got people advocating for and helping and even protecting me. You could miss identity threats if you're just monitoring your credit. No one can stop all identity theft or monitor all transactions at all businesses. That's why there's LifeLock. LifeLock can see threats that you might miss on your own. Join now and save up to 25% off your first year with the promo code LifeLock. So call 1-800-LifeLock right now. Do this today or visit LifeLock.com to save 25%, up to 25%. You'll want to use the promo code LifeLock. I see. What's the matter, Sam Panionovich?
Just two quick things. I had two more very quick props, right?
Okay.
We just talked Super Bowl props.
Yeah.
Shortest touchdown of the game, 1.5 yards.
I'll take the over on that. Over on
and
that.
And the first pass for Patrick Mahomes, complete, incomplete.
The first pass for him, how young is he?
20.
Has he played in the Super Bowl?
Three? No, he never has.
His first one, he's going to be feeling.
You want to bet $100 on the first pass?
That he will over.
Complete or incomplete?
Incomplete.
Okay.
You feel very good about that. That was a quick answer.
Yeah, well, the $100 I feel really good about are pretend $100, so it doesn't that much
some things in life are bad.
Worry me about
they
losing.
Really make you mad.
Hey, it's 11:48.
Other things just make you swear.
312-981-7200. Call now.
When you're chewing on life's gristle, that grumble. Give a whistle.
Hey, I got some open lines you can call.
This'll help things turn.
Lauren Lapka, will you watch the texting line for us, please?
Got you covered, King John.
Always look on the bright.
All right, everybody, get ready to whistle.
Always look.
Hey, Lauren, welcome to the saddle and traffic. What's your bright side? What's making you smile on this gray, foggy day?
Well, in honor of Sox Fest, what makes me smile is the entire White Sox offseason. I am so excited and so happy.
I know. You know, I'm going to double down on that. I have been getting more joy out of the White Sox not playing baseball than I have in a very long time.
The offseason World Series.
Oh, my God. We haven't lost a game. In fact, we've won them all. Steve Bertrand's in the newsroom. You got a bright side, Steve Bertrand?
Yes, my lovely wife, my dear wife, collects sleeper sofas, and we're getting a new one delivered today. And the good news is she's going to bribe the movers into taking the old one out of the house.
She collects sleeper sofas?
So I won't have to do it. Well, we have to be prepared in case 30 people ever spend the night.
Forget about your seat.
Sam, what's your bright side? Why are you smiling, Mr. Panayotovich?
Well, this is my first bright side. First-time caller, long-time listener. I'm happy about that. And not to be too cheesy, but every time I walk back around the studio, no matter who's here, everybody is always very happy to see me. And that's a good thing.
Evidently, you haven't been going to all of the offices, but I think that's still...
You've got to weave around some of them.
Come by the newsroom, Sam.
Just saying. You guys,
in a long time.
You guys like me somewhat, is what I'm saying. That's my bright side.
Hey, Sally Field, we do. And the only rule about the bright side is we do not judge, criticize, or belittle other people's happiness. If it makes you happy, it makes me happy. And I thought you were going to say, when you walk around, you bring joy to our shows, because you absolutely do that, Sam.
Don't speak for me.
It's a pleasure to speak
don't
with you.
Don't speak for me.
All right, here we go now. Joanne, or is it Joan? You're on WGN. What's your bright side?
It's Joanne. Hi.
Hi.
I have two bright sides. My youngest son got engaged last Friday, and my oldest son will be starting a new job at Google at the beginning of February.
Well, that's two winner-winner chicken dinners. And that Google thing, how about that, huh?
How about that? Yeah.
Wow, wow, wow.
It's something, yeah.
Enjoy. Yeah. Thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Lauren Lapka's reading your text, 312-981-7200.
Is that cue to go for me? Okay, because I got a few good ones lined up for you already.
Like what?
262 says their bright side is that it's their and their twins' birthday, 38 and feeling great. Also, 773 says that their youngest son recently graduated number one EMT for the Chicago Fire Department, fulfilling a lifelong goal. Johnny Rotten, there's
something you forgot. How about Deb? You're on WGN. Why are you smiling today, Deb? You're on the air.
Hi, good morning. I just finished pet therapy class with my dog, Gracie, and she did the best today in any class yet.
Happy day, Gracie. Now, you be a good doggy. Pet training. Thank you for the phone call, Deb. Congratulations to you both. This is Steve. You're on WGN. Why are you smiling today, Steve?
Yesterday, my daughter got an acceptance letter to a direct admit to a doctor's a physical therapy program. And on the letter, it said over 900 applicants for 62 chairs, and she got in.
Wow. That PT stuff is tough. I know so many super smart, good kids, and PT schools are hard to get in, aren't they?
She didn't think she was going to get in, but she got in yesterday, last night.
How about that? Thank you, Steve. Congrats to her. Hey, Lori, you're on WGN. Why are you smiling today, Lori?
Well, I'm retired now, but when Ebola was scaring us all, oh, probably 7, 8, 9 years ago, the hospital I worked at in one of the suburbs, we were starting to do Ebola drills, and I got to be the dirty tech. To go get samples, and the practice, the consideration, everything that goes into it, that's all in place now.
Yeah. I got to tell you.
I'm happy about that.
Yeah. Well, it's a funny thing to say on the bright side, but when we carried that press conference earlier, I felt really good about how Chicago prepares for things like this. The coronavirus is what you're keying on, and I couldn't agree with you more. Thanks, Lori.
with a bat.
Lauren Lapka, you got another one for us?
Yes, one of those kind of little thing. 847 says after weeks of fighting the sinus junk, they call it, they feel better. Knock on wood.
Hey, Becky, you're on WGN. Why are you smiling today?
Hey, John. Sadly, we lost our 10-year-old dog earlier this week. But by a miracle, we found two new breeds, a breed we've been looking for a long time. And my husband and I are flying to Vegas, baby, to pick up two brothers. They're in a rescue. They're 3 years old. And then we're going to drive them back across country next week, if all goes well.
I want to hear from you on that road trip. You call us back, okay?
Okay, we sure will. Thanks so much.
What if she wins? What if she wins so much money?
John, we've changed our mind. I'm calling from Vegas. We live here now.
What if she says, I won $500,000 in Vegas?
Did you play? You lived out there for a couple years. Did you play much?
Nightmare.
You didn't play?
I'm not answering that. I played the fifth.
On line eight, it's Mike. You're on WGN. Mike, what's your bright side?
Hey, my bright side, John, is I got a shovel in my hand, but I'm thinking White Sox baseball because we got Sox Fest at McCormick Place.
You better believe it. Today's the day. More reports coming on. Have a great weekend. Lauren Lapka, can you read another bright side text?
Oh, yeah. 630, their bright side is they don't have to see Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers face off in the Super Bowl.
Really? The Bears aren't earning it, but on the bright side, Tom Brady isn't either. Ha ha.
Always look on the light.
Let's go to Ann. You're on WGN. Ann, why are you smiling? You're on the air.
Hey, John. We, after years and years and years of always putting our kids first and paying for college tuition, scraping every penny and working every hour of overtime, my husband and I are splurging on ourselves. We are doing date night downtown, restaurant week, two nights, staying overnight, and I can't wait to see that handsome husband just for myself.
You're about to start crying. I'm about to start crying, Ann.
You know, it's a big, big thing to do for your kids, and you sacrifice everything, and you're so happy to do it. But, man, is it a good feeling when it gets back right around full circle back to you and your husband again.
My wife and I described the moment you're now experiencing as being out of college jail, and it is free. It is freeing, isn't it?
It's liberating, and when those two little birdies go off and they're successful and they're doing great, that just makes it all the much sweeter.
Thanks for the call, Ann. Congrats. Have a great weekend. Lauren Lapka, we're getting close to the end here. What else have you got?
I got one text, but two bright sides. 847 says that their neighbors helped them shovel their very long driveway, and they're excited about Jimmy G and the 49ers because he's the hometown guy for them.
How about that? Yeah, no
very
kidding.
Very exciting. If life
seems jolly. Hey, Bernadine, this is John. What's your bright side, Bernadine?
Oh, I'm 83 years old, and my grandson and his fiance asked me to be their flower girl. I think it's absolutely supersonic.
That's got to be a thing. More people should do that. That's lovely. Bernadine, congrats. Thanks. Carl, what's your bright side? You're on WGN.
Hey, King John. My bright side is I will forever be able to smile, chuckle, or if not, out loud laugh at the memory of the man himself or the lifelong work of one Terry Jones.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are remembering fondly Terry Jones and Monty Python's Flying Circus this week. That's our little song we play there, too. Thanks. That's what we do on Fridays. It's called The Bright Side. I love it when you call and text. We'll do it again next Friday. Business news and regular news all coming up.